I have that trust and that peace. So I've really noticed that the last couple of times, and I don't feel angry towards God or bitter towards God. Am I tired? Yes. You know, am I struggling with the fact that you're still not here? Yes. But yeah, it's different. And that just reminded me when I read that. Rest assured that if God waits longer than we desire, it is simply to make the blessings doubly precious.
It is 6:24 in the morning on July 24th, 2022, and I'm feeling so filled with joy this morning that I interrupted this prayer to make this recording. By the time I finished listening to All Things Together for the Good, I decided to roll out of bed, and I grabbed my phone, and it was 5:12. This is the true grace of God. Stand firm in it. So yesterday, the big downer was, it's another major marker day. We've had two now in the last month, July 14th and July 23rd, that have come to nothing, whereas all the others have hit. The June 28th, July 6th, and all these other little onesie-twosie days, we've had these things that have happening regarding the land and stuff like that. And so all those other dates hit, but these two, what I felt were really significant dates, came and went with nothing. And we're really, really surprised about it. Although it's not like God literally said to me in a dream or put his finger on it, but we pay attention to these providences. I have no choice. I'm a prisoner to it. I have to watch and account for it all. And, you know, so many times they land spot on. And I told Lisa that I've just become more consciously aware over and over again of 1 Corinthians 13:9 that we know in part and we prophesy in part, that I see how we're right some of the times and wrong some of the times. It's just remarkable. And you don't really know until that day comes and goes. But one thing that is so incredible, when I look at the 5:12, this is the true grace of God, stand firm in it, when I rolled out of bed this morning. And then when I listened to my wife's recording and I look at the two exciting things that happened yesterday, and I said, sweetheart, look at how virtually every single time God gives us a date that we think it's going to have something to do with putting you and I together. I said, if you notice, that thing doesn't happen, but something significant almost always happens on those dates. She goes, I know, honey. I said, it's so incredible. So, for example, what would be the chances of yesterday, the day that we have this marker day, of Lisa and I finding a feature on this timeline software I'm working with that completely revolutionized and solved the greatest problems that we were having in my timeline display? I clicked one button practically by accident, and I said, oh, I wonder what this does inside of the settings. And she looked at the timeline, and she says, oh, honey, what did you do? And I said, oh, my goodness. And it instantly turned it into the most amazing display of seeing my life story in images, and it solved the problem of the large gaps of time between the Lord's gym and then the next event, where there was a few years between the first timed event. And suddenly you can see it, and it solved a whole bunch of problems that we were having, that she was having navigating. She goes like, oh my goodness, look at this. Now I can just see the whole thing, and it's there, and I can easily navigate. I'm like, oh my goodness, I cannot believe this just happened. It literally was like finding a whole new timeline. I mean, it was just amazing. And so she just kept going on and on. She couldn't stop looking at it. And even after we shut my computer down and I went into regular talk mode, she says, honey, I can't take my eyes off of this. She says, I just cannot believe how amazing this is. And so suddenly we were seeing all these events that I've been working on in the last few days, and you can see them all. They're right there. It's looking at my whole life snapshot and pictures with all these big, giant dates and times, and it just allows you to so quickly visualize the story and how God has dealt with me. It's just, it's unbelievable. So we can't wait for me to plug all these dates in. But then after that happened, which just kept us so excited, yesterday was the day we had our first family meeting that was actually determined by. So we tried to do this 15 days earlier and she choked. I caught her off guard and she was embarrassed and she didn't have what she wanted prepared to say. And she's already, you know, uncomfortable talking on any kind of social media, any kind of phone. And here she's having to talk to me and all this kind of stuff on video. And it was just really difficult for her. And I told Lisa last 2 weeks ago, I said, sweetheart, we're not going to put any pressure on her. I said, give her as much time as she needs. And so what we had done is I determined that in order for her to qualify for doing homeschooling, which is an actual program, not just Lisa and I teaching her, but an actual homeschooling curriculum program, guided program that she's really wanting to get out of school for all kinds of reasons that we had been praying about, I needed her to explain to me why she thought this was going to be a good decision for us as a family and for her. I wanted her to give me her reasons. And I'm trying to make a lesson out of this about how we have to have strong reasons when we go to God in prayer and we have not because we ask not and all that stuff. And I want her to learn that trusting me is like trusting God and trusting God is like trusting me. And the reasons that you won't say something to me or you're uncomfortable with me is the same reasons you won't say something to God or you're uncomfortable with him. It's because it's an issue of trust. So we attempted to have the family meeting and she choked up. And I explained to her that in order for her to find out the decision that we had made about whether or not she can homeschool, I needed her to be prepared to give to me her very best reasons and make her case. And Lisa was really kind of surprised. And I said, honey, it's okay. I said, take all the pressure off of her. Let's let her come back to us when she's ready. And I told Lisa, I said, sweetheart, you just have to trust me with this. And so she has trusted me with parenting like you could have never imagined. She's allowing me to parent her from afar. And I'll give her some input on some things. And I'll say, now, honey, this is going to be difficult, what I'm getting ready to say in this message. Or this is going to be hard for her to hear. Or this is going to be hard for you to deal with. But you have to trust me on this. And Lisa trusts me. So I told her, I said, look, don't say anything more about this meeting. And we also had the announcement that we were going to pay her $20 a week for allowance. And not for her doing any particular work, but to have some spending money to be able to do some things with her friends after school and things like that, and to do this, that, and the other, so that she doesn't have to come to us for money. She's got it built in, $20 a week. So she missed out on that 2 weeks ago because she didn't have the courage to go through with the family meeting, and we were going to let her know this. And I said to Lisa, I said, sweetheart, just wait, and in her timing, when the desire gets strong enough, she'll sit down, she'll make her notes, and she'll want to have a conversation with me and present the case, and her desire will overcome her shyness. I said, just be patient, and I said, don't say anything else to her. Don't hint about it. Don't say, oh, well, you know, if you would have... And I said, don't say anything about it. Just let it go. And we did. And here it was 2 weeks later, almost to the day. She had decided she wanted to talk. So we were so excited. We had planned it like 2 days in advance. So yesterday was the day that we had our very first family meeting. And we made sure that she was visible on the phone and the video and all that. And you could see she was uncomfortable and she began to struggle and she started to look to her mom to give her some words. And we said, no. You know, you need to be having the courage to do this and you can do all things through Christ who strengthens you. And I said, let me have a talk with you about this shyness and about, you know, your intimidation speaking to me and all that stuff. And so I had this long conversation with her in the beginning. And I made myself very vulnerable. And I told her, I said, you're looking at one of the most afraid people you've ever met. I said, I have been so afraid. And I told her all about all the childhood bullying and the abuse and the neglect and all these things. And how I would walk even as an adult, into a Starbucks. And I would be instantly consciously aware, like I had an antenna. And I could read all the people in the store and find out where they were at. Measuring them up as they were measuring me up. I was sizing them up, both men and women, to see how did I fit? How did I measure up? And I was so totally focused on myself And I was explaining to her about how shyness paralyzes you, puts you in a prison, and it puts you so focused on yourself that it prevents you from being able to focus on and serve others as a Christian. You cannot be a Christian and be so focused on yourself, because it removes your ability to serve other people. And I said, instead, if you'll learn to put that focus on other people, and you're doing what God asks you to do, and by doing so, you remove the shyness because you're no longer so focused on yourself. So I was explaining these things to her, and I could see she was really listening, and she began to settle down. She was able to go through her family meeting, and she was able to read her lessons, and then her points. She gave me her points, and they were points of why she thought it would be good for her and why she thought it would be good for us, because her mom had said, look, this isn't just something that we're making a decision for you. This has to be that it's best for the family as well. So we went through all of her points, and I would ask more questions and inquire and tell me more about that. I thought her points were remarkable. I was so proud of her. And we ended up having the most blessed time. We started by my reading a devotion and prayer. I said, you know, God is at the foundation of everything we do. He is the reason why we're here as a family. He is the reason why we will make it as a family, or we will fail as a family. And I said, so let's start out with a devotion. I read the July 23rd evening streams, and then we prayed. And I tell you what, God's blessing was on that call. By the end of the evening, I was so filled with joy over the experience I had with and her talking to us about this and about what she felt that it would be best for the family for this to happen, and her reasons and her being more comfortable with me. Even Lisa got up one time and walked away from the camera to go get some blankets and socks for them because they were cold, and just kept right on having this conversation with me, which was just so beautiful. And by the end of the call, she had gotten up, and Lisa and I continued on. She became this little chatty Kathy, and she just kept coming back and wanted to talk to us about this food she was going to make, and Michael's going to love this, and ask Michael about this. And she just became this chatty Kathy. It was like we could see there was a breakthrough that happened last night. Indeed, it can be said that we crossed over in something. We crossed over as a family into a new realm of family last night. We maybe didn't move me towards New Zealand, but we moved us towards family. And last night I was telling Lisa after we ended our video call, I just said, sweetheart, I can't even tell you the joy that I have about our daughter. I said, I feel like we just became, like, as in all of us agreeing to become family last night. I mean, clearly she has known this is coming and she doesn't have any choice in the matter. I said, but last night she included me in the conversation, and she included me in the decisions that she's making in her life. She included me in the meals that she's going to make in the future that she's so excited about, and what we will do, and what we will do. And we talked about me teaching her to ride the UTV. She's like wanting to go to this friend that lives, turns out, right up the street from where we're going to be moving. And she's talking to her mom about, oh, maybe I can take the UTV and ride up there. And Lisa's like, no, I don't think you can do that. That's a $20,000 vehicle. And I said, oh, honey, I'll teach her how to drive that thing. And I said, see, there's a thing that I can teach her how to do and teach her how to be safe and all that kind of stuff. I said, I'd love to teach her. So it went from there. And I told her how I can't wait to be a role in her life. And I want her to be able to trust me, and I'll earn her trust and respect, and that I can pour into her life and watch in her life and spend time with her. And in my humble opinion, it could not have gone any better than it did. And I was so distracted by how well that went. It's like I couldn't feel any disappointment that nothing happened as far as moving us towards New Zealand. I also found it very interesting that yesterday I got the first email from one of my subscribers in New Zealand about land, a piece of land for your tiny house. And it just so happened that it's a lady named Prudence who knows us through the ministry. And then I've connected her, or somehow or another she got connected to Elvin and Shalini. And they've just stayed very good friends also in New Zealand. But she had seen a sign somewhere for property and wanted to know if we hadn't already found property here as a listing. I just thought the timing of that was interesting, but we already have found our property. But it was just interesting that comes on a marker day. And I just was so blessed. I had so much joy in my heart hearing what happened with last night in our family meeting. And she was very thankful about the allowance. She was very thankful about the school. At one point, she almost looked like she got a little emotional over a part of our conversation. And it was just beautiful. Lisa was so excited. And then the thing that blessed me the most this morning is the message I got from my wife. She found a patience that she's never had in one of these dates coming and going. She says, "Sweetheart, I just feel so at rest and trusting the Lord." And when I see that 5:12, I again see how I know the Lord has given us every one of these dates to believe for. And they come and go, and it's no longer a crushing blow. They used to be so crushing to both of us and so perplexing. And now we're just like, "Okay, Lord, whatever you say." It is honestly the greatest miracle, is to see the human heart change in the face of the strongest desire. The Lord stirred the desire in accord with his will for us. And then to see the desire that we have for one another, how close we are, how much alike we are. This marriage is extraordinary. It's an extraordinary marriage that we have. 3 hours a day for 15 months, only missing one day in all that time. 1 year and 3 months, we've only missed one day of talking where we intentionally fasted. We have done every part of life together. It's been so incredible. Every season, every issue of life, it's been amazing. And we are just so having such strong desire that these dates come and go and they can be crushing and perplexing. And now it's like Lisa is just, "Honey," and she read the July 27th streams about waiting on God, and I think July 22nd. And she's just like, just feeling so patient and so accepting and restful. And so am I. We both feel we found another gear. We're not like, "Oh, Lord, this doesn't make sense." No, we're just like, "Okay, Father, we know." We have so much evidence of, if we see how he dealt with the tiny house, the getting it there, the even getting it on the ship, the whole process, the getting it on the ship, the getting it there, the getting it parked, how he arranged that, the finding land for it, the timing of having me send my bags off, the timing that it set in customs, the timing of its arrival back to her house, you know, right at her house, the timing of the heavenly scandal, the timing of our actually acquiring the land, the timing of all these things. We rest in it. We see that no matter how many times a date comes and goes, that we believed, that we hoped, of course we do, we hope for it, we find the timing ends up being perfect. Like, I think the bags is the most recent example. So to see these things, we rest and we go, "Ah, sovereign Lord, you know what's best." So to me, the great miracle is in listening to my wife's recording this morning, compared to what I would have heard, where there might have been tears. In fact, even recently, there was a recording where there were tears when July 14th, we couldn't understand the whole blast and they set out. 10 days later was yesterday. Revelation 2:10, "Do not be afraid of what you're about to suffer. The Lord will put you in prison for 10 days to test you." And I thought, well, gosh, isn't that remarkable that the 2 days are 10 days apart? Don't know what the Lord's doing. Can't figure it out all the time. I have to wait many times till after he does it, and then I'm able to trace it out. But I'm just going to continue to just stay eager. And what I find amazing is that after all this time, I still have all this energy to give God, I'll call it the full gamble, so that when I see a date that comes, I'm willing to give him all my faith. I hold the result loosely, but I'm like, "I don't know, Lord, if you're going to do it," because I have a track record. I can look back, and particularly working on this timeline of my life, it's absolutely unbelievable. I'm like, "God, how am I going to steward this and find all of this?" I'm now up to, I think, up to 138 dates that are very significant dates. And all of them, not all of them have I found dates connecting one to another yet, but they're all very significant. So not all of them are dated. So we found a way to distinguish in the timeline events that are just events. They're significant events, but as of yet, we haven't yet found a time connection to those. And then we're taking all the other events and we're coloring them in according to the category of time frame that they're in. So 777, 555, 666, those date categories are all timed by color category. So you can see, you know, each different group of dates. But I'm looking at this and I'm going, Father, there's so many and so hard to find. So yet the Lord just keeps like making it effortless. I just keep finding these dates effortlessly. Like the Lord will, I'll think about a date and then the Lord will instantly bring up another event and I'll go, oh, wow. And so the Spirit is causing me to find the events by bringing the events to my mind, like matching 9/11/2022 to August 22nd, 2001, the day I opened the gym, which that becomes the first dated event that God ever does in my life. And suddenly I put it in timeanddate.com and I realize it's 21 years and 21 days. And I'm like, you have got to be kidding me. That's incredible. So all the 21s that God did at the end of my story with Lisa. So I just have this trust. I'm able to look at what God has done and not be in a panic about what he didn't just do. Because what I see is these dates that God allows us to come to, these waters that are bitter that he led Israel to five times, no water or bitter water. He intentionally led them to a place where they thought for sure they would have water and they get there and it's bitter or it doesn't exist. He did it to test them. And what would happen now is if Lisa and I, say if God did something like any time in the future, as long as we maintain the faith and the attitude we have right now, we will have moved in. The fruit will be ripe in our heart spiritually that we totally acquiesced. And we got to a place where our patience had matured to a place where we were not mad at God. We did not question God. We did not kick against anything, if you will. We didn't do a stiff upper lip. We just said, oh, Lord. I mean, my wife's recording this morning is the greatest blessing of July 23rd. And it happened. I just read it. I just listened to it this morning. And I listened to that and I go, wow, God, this is why I wake up and I roll over at 5:12 to get out of bed is this is your working. You are allowing this to happen. He has totally changed my wife in this way. The word she hates the most is wait. And now here it is all this time later. She's just like, okay, Lord, we'll just wait for you. We know that. I mean, it's absolutely amazing.
I looked at the day before, July 22nd evening, and I don't believe you've read this to me. Forgive me if you have and I've forgotten and you're having to hear it again, but this was quite comforting to me. So the scripture is, therefore will the Lord wait, that he may be gracious unto you. Blessed are all they that wait for him. Isaiah 30 verse 18. We should not only understand the importance of our waiting on God, but also realize something even more wonderful. The Lord waits on us. And the very thought of his waiting on us will give us renewed motivation and inspiration to wait for him. It will also provide inexpressible confidence that our waiting will never be in vain. Therefore, in the spirit of waiting of God, let us seek to discover exactly what it means right now. The Lord has an inconceivably glorious purpose for each of his children. If this is true, you ask, why is it that he continues to wait longer and longer to offer his grace and to provide the help I seek, even after I have come and waited on him? He does so because he is a wise gardener who waits for the land to yield its valuable crop and is patient for the autumn and spring rains, James 5 verse 7. I think that we've demonstrated patience today. I think I've definitely noticed the last two market days today and the time before that I have felt more peace with those dates coming and going than I have all the rest. So, not to say it's still not hard, not to say I'm not disappointed and would still, you know, and that I'm not desperately still waiting for God to open up the floodgates and get you here, but I have that trust and that peace. So I've really noticed that the last couple of times, and I don't feel angry towards God or bitter towards God. Am I tired? Yes. You know, am I struggling with the fact that you're still not here? Yes. But, yeah, it's different. And that just reminded me when I read that. And is patient for the autumn and spring rains, James 5 verse 7.
Michael commentary. So in Ecclesiastes 7:13, there's a scripture that says, "Who can make straight that which God has made crooked?" And that crooked thing is implied by the Puritan writer Thomas Boston in his book called The Crook in the Lot. To be any limitation and any terrible suffering, it could be infirmity, it could be bodily sickness, financial trouble, mental trouble, any kind of limitation, social skills that are impeded, physical skills that have been impeded, you name it. It's anything that God has allowed in our life for the purposes of humbling us and testing us to see how we will respond to this. So in his book, I'm going to read a little excerpt here where he talks about how one of the purposes of the crook in the lot is to test whether or not you have a saving faith. And I'm bringing this out because it's something for all of us to know. And I'm making the connection between Lisa's testifying that she now has this grace when these dates come, that whereas before she may have been more tempted to be upset and angry. Now, again, we all can do this. This can come back again. And in fact, it has come back before for me and for Lisa. But it's out of character. It's something that happens in a few moments or a few hours or maybe even a few days at best. But it's out of character for our Christian walk because we're in possession of grace. And so sometimes the Lord will reduce or pull back that grace for further testing, to remind you of who you are apart from Him, to test you, or perhaps there's been some area of disobedience, etc. But overall in your life, one of the great ways you can tell if you are truly in possession of the grace of Jesus Christ is how you respond to the afflictions that He sends. So here is a short reading from the once well-known Puritan Thomas Boston called The Crook in the Lot. The crook in the lot is a test of saving faith. Suffering tests whether we are in a state of grace or not, whether we are a sincere Christian or a hypocrite. Although every affliction is trying, I believe that this is the main providential trial we go through with regard to our eternal state. Because the crook in the lot is a matter of continued duration, meaning time, we have an opportunity to prove ourselves again and again in the same area. When the trial reaches its peak, it provides the ground for a decision. It was on this basis that the trial of Job's state was clearly put. The question was whether Job was an upright and sincere servant of God, as God Himself testified of him, or only a self-serving one, a hypocrite, as Satan alleged against him. And Job's trial was placed upon the crook in his lot, Job 1:8-12, 2:3-6. And this is where he's received all this trouble, lost his farm, his family, his house, his children, even his health. Accordingly, all of his friends, except Elihu, reasoned with him in this trial to prove him to be a hypocrite. In this way, Satan used these good men to press his point. God similarly tested Israel in the wilderness as they entered the land of Canaan. After a sequence of afflicting trials, Caleb and Joshua alone persevered and were declared fit to enter the promised land, having followed the Lord fully. Others who grew weary of the Lord's commands had their carcasses fall in the wilderness. In this way, he makes a trial of men for heaven by the crook in their lot. If one can stand the test, he is manifested to be a saint, a sincere servant of God, as Job was proven to be. If not, he is only a hypocrite. He cannot stand the test of the crook in his lot, but goes away like dross in God's furnace. A melancholy example of this is found in the rich young man who came to Jesus with high pretenses of religion and moral seriousness. He asked Jesus, "What must I do to inherit eternal life?" Mark 10:17. Our Savior, to reveal the man to himself, made a crook in his lot where none existed previously. He obliged him by a direct command to, quote, "Go, sell all you have and give to the poor, and you will have treasure in heaven, and come follow me," verse 21. At that moment, in the court of conscience, he was stripped of his great possessions, so that he could from that point no longer keep them with a good conscience as he might have done before. The man instantly felt the sting of this crook made in his lot. Immediately upon hearing this command, he was struck with pain, disorder, and confusion of mind. His countenance changed, becoming cloudy and threatening, as the same word is used in Matthew 16:3. He could not stand the test of that crook. There was no way he could submit his lot to God in that point. Instead, he was determined to have things according to his own mind at any cost. So, disheartened by the saying, he went away sorrowful, for he had great possessions. Verse 22. He went away from Christ and back to his plentiful estate. And though he was pained and sorrowful of heart, he sat down again on it as a violent possessor before the Lord, rejecting his divine order. And there is no evidence that the Lord ever revoked this order, nor that the rich man ever complied with it. End of commentary.
God knows he cannot gather the fruit until it is ripe, and he knows precisely when we are spiritually ready to receive blessings of our gain and his glory. And waiting in the sunshine of his love is what will ripen our soul for his blessings. Also, waiting under the clouds of trials is as important, for they will ultimately produce showers of blessings. Rest assured that if God waits longer than we desire, it is simply to make the blessings doubly precious. Yeah, we know that's the case, eh, sweetheart? Remember, he waited 4,000 years, but when the set time had fully come, God sent his Son. Galatians 4 verse 4. Our time is in his hands, and he will quickly avenge those he has chosen, swiftly coming to our support without ever delaying even 1 hour too long. Andrew Murray.
Michael commentary. So this is a short reading from the book The Life of Elijah, where he's talking about Elijah's prayer life. And in this principle, he speaks of Elijah's perseverance in his prayer and supplication. A.W. Pink writes, "This is the most noticeable feature about the whole transaction of his prayer with God, and it is one in which we need particularly to heed. For it is at this very point most of us fail the worst." Quote, "And he said to his servant, 'Go up now, look toward the sea.' And he went up and looked and said, 'There is nothing, nothing, nothing in the sky, nothing arising out of the sea to indicate the approach of rain.' Does not both the writer and you, the reader, know the meaning of this from personal experience? We have sought the Lord and then hopefully looked for his intervention. But instead of any token from him that he has heard us, there is nothing. And what has been our response? Have we petulantly and unbelievingly said, just as I thought, and ceased praying about it? If so, that was a wrong attitude to take. First, make sure your petition is grounded upon a divine promise, and then believingly wait God's time to fulfill it. If you have no definite promise, commit your case into God's hands and seek to be reconciled to His will as to the outcome. Quote, and he went up and looked and said, there is nothing. Even Elijah was not always answered immediately. And who are we to demand a prompt answer to our first asking? The prophet did not consider that because he had prayed once and there was no response, therefore he had no need to continue to pray. Rather, did he persevere in pressing his suit until he received. Such was the persistency of the patriarch Jacob. Quote, I will not let thee go except you bless me. Genesis 32:26. Such was the psalmist's mode of praying. Quote, I waited patiently for the Lord, and he inclined unto me and heard my cry. Psalm 40, verse 1. And he said, go again 7 times, verse 43, was the prophet's command to his servant. He was convinced that sooner or later God would grant his request, yet he was persuaded he should, quote, give him no rest, unquote. Isaiah 62:7. 6 times the servant returned with his report that there was no portent of rain, that means sign, yet the prophet relaxed not his supplication. And let us not be faint-hearted when no immediate success attends our praying, but be importunate. That means persevering to the point of almost being irritating, exercising faith and patience until the blessing comes. To ask once, twice, thrice, nay, 6 times, and then be denied was no slight test of Elijah's endurance. But grace was granted him to bear the trial. Therefore will the Lord wait, that he may be gracious unto you. Isaiah 30, verse 18. Why? To teach us that we are not heard for our fervor or urgency or because of the justness of our cause. We can claim nothing from God. All is of grace, and we must wait His time. The Lord waits, not because He is tyrannical, but, quote, that He may be gracious. It is for our good that He waits, that our graces may be developed, that submission to His holy will may be wrought in us. Then He lovingly turns to us and says, great is thy faith, be it unto thee as thou wilt. Matthew 15:28. This is the confidence that we have in Him, that if we ask anything according to His will, He hears us. And if we know that He hears us, whatever it is we ask, we know that we have the petitions that we desired of Him. John 5:14-15. God cannot break His own word, but we must abide His time and, refusing to be discouraged, continue supplicating Him until He appears on our behalf. And it came to pass at the 7th time that He said, behold, there ariseth a little cloud out of the sea like a man's hand. Verse 44. The prophet's perseverance in prayer had not been in vain. For here was a token from God that he was heard. God does not often give a full answer to prayer all at once, but a little at first and then gradually more and more as he sees that to be good for us. What the believer has now is nothing to what he shall yet have if he continues instant and persistent in prayer, believing and earnest prayer. Though God was pleased to keep the prophet waiting for a time, he did not disappoint his expectation, nor will he fail us if we continue in prayer and watch in the same with thanksgiving. then let us be ready to receive with cheerfulness and gratitude the least indication of an answer to our petitions, accepting it as a token for good and an encouragement to persevere in our requests until there be full accomplishment of those desires which are grounded upon the Word. Small beginnings often produce wonderful effects, as the parable of the grain of mustard seed clearly teaches, Matthew 13:31. The feeble efforts of the apostles met with remarkable success as God owned and blessed them. We regard the words, quote, like a man's hand, as possessing a symbolic meaning. A man's hand had been raised in supplication and had, as it were, left its shadow on the heavens. End of commentary. Praise be to God for what He's done. When I look at just my wife's heart, I see mine too. But Lisa has struggled more with the timing of it than I have. And she admits it. She knows. I've had more patience because I've done this for a lot more years than she has. And to see my wife say what she said to me today, I say hip, hip, hooray.